This is 4:55 on Friday, December 2nd. All right. We'll start. I tried, but I couldn't get the assignment to work, so I'll do it when I get back. So, as you will recall, last time we talked about hashing functions and hash message authentication codes, and we talked about their use in, say, OSPF. That's good. But we now come to the problem of what happens if Trudy manages to record a message from Alice to Bob and play it back. Right? So it will be signed by Alice, but if Trudy plays it back, how does Bob know not to do this huge transfer again, for example? And there are lots of situations where messages are not, as we say, idempotent. Idempotent messages are nice. Idempotent means that if you do the thing again and the state already changed, nothing more happens. Right? But not all messages are, and so we worry about this not just in the context of message authentication, but in a lot of distributed systems contexts, it's important to know whether a message has been replayed or not. So, get at that, we introduced the idea of a nonce, which this slide does not show. Okay. I don't know what's happened here. I think maybe switching from PowerPoint to PDF slides, something has been lost. But I can add it on. So the idea of a nonce is that Bob says something that he knows to Alice that gives him sort of a point in time at which he knows that he's interacting with Alice. So Alice says, remember what Alice wants to do is send a message directing Bob to do something. But we want to prevent Trudy from replaying that message. So what happens is Alice introduces herself to Bob. Bob gives Alice something that he knows is current right now. And then when Alice sends the message back to Bob, she includes this information from Bob as part of her message back to him. Okay? And now Bob can look at that and say, have I seen that before? Or is that current? And typically, a nonce can be as simple as an integer, but is typically somehow related to real time or wall clock time. So if Bob just makes up a random number to send to Alice, and she sends it back and he gets it, that's fine. He'll recognize it and say, okay, that's good. But remember, he has to remember that he's seen that message now before, right? So he has to put R in a table along with something that says has been used, and maybe he has sent out S, has not been used. Okay, somehow he has to keep track of these things. So time helps with this because he can remember his nonces only for a fixed period of time, for example, and say, I'm only going to let you use this for the next 30 seconds. And if you don't use it, it's going to expire and you're going to have to come see me again for another one. So this idea of a nonce is important in preventing replay attacks. The word is kind of funny. It's an old word, you know, for the nonce, for the time being. kind of old-fashioned English, but it got adopted sort of early on in distributed systems work. What?
They're bringing it back.
Okay. Okay. We can use public key cryptography for message authentication as well. Again. All right. So I told you last time my opinion about statements like this. Your turn to tell me. Quiz time. Property is sometimes called non-repudiation. But how can we state this more precisely?
Assuming that nobody else has box key.
Right. It really only tells you up to the level of assuming that nobody else has Bob's key. And it can be very difficult for Bob to show that maybe somebody else does have his key, but sometimes, you know, sort of the outside evidence suggests that somebody does have Bob's key. For example, and it doesn't crop up so much in this situation, but an example of this assumption getting built into a system in a way that is not good for public policy is that a few years ago in Britain, people were losing money out of their bank accounts to people using ATM cards. And the laws in Britain at the time said that if money was taken out of your bank account using what appeared to be your ATM card, you were liable for it. And it was worse than that. That's bad enough. But then the banks started going to the prosecutors and telling the prosecutors that the people who were complaining about this were trying to commit fraud on the banks. And people got put in jail because somebody had stolen their ATM card.
Guy Fawkes is onto something.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so you gotta remember that when you think that there's a secret, it may not be. It may not be a secret. And so often we sort of get into this mathematical way of talking about these things that doesn't recognize the sort of realities of systems and society. So I can get off my soapbox now. Okay. Well, we talked about how you do encryption. Remember, encryption, sending secret message to Alice. Bob encrypts the message with Alice's, which key? Alice, if Bob wants to send a secret message to Alice, which key? Public key, because he's Bob. He shouldn't have Alice's private key. And Alice decrypts it with her private key. For signing, Bob sends a message encrypted with his private key, and anybody can decrypt it with his public key and know that it came from him. Assuming his key is safe. Thank you very much. Assuming his key really is his. Well, again, this is encryption with public keys is expensive. So the more common thing is to actually sign a hash of the message with the private key. So we take the large message, we hash it, we do a public key encryption with the encryption with the private key, and then send all of that along and check over on the other side by decrypting the hash. All right, so that's just how to make it work better. See, they said it right here, and they said it wrong there. Whoever signed M must have used Bob's private key. And then we go on and conclude that Bob signed it. Okay? That's just... it's so easy to fall into this trap. Okay. Again, how do we know that it's Bob's public key? The person who wants to verify the message has to know that that public key really belongs to Bob, not just that somebody said it belongs to Bob. Huh? Bob doesn't even like pepperoni, yeah. That sort of thing, yeah. But absent the kind of mechanism I'm about to talk about, this is just so doable, right? Because there's no protections at all. Alice says that
more akin to like creating an email with somebody else's name and then using
that. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Easier even than getting into their account, because you don't do anything affecting them at all except prank them. Yeah.
Maybe this is just them explaining this badly, but Trudy sends the pizza store her public key but says it's Bob's public key. That doesn't make sense.
What she's doing is
her public key, then her public key would be identical to Bob's public key.
No. No, she's just lying.
She's just claiming to be Bob.
Dear pizza store, please. No. See, she's pranking. She's pretending to be Bob, but the pizza store doesn't know Bob's public key. She just tells them hers and says it's Bob's.
Okay.
So now she can sign, or she just makes one up. You know, it isn't like these are hard to come by. Yeah. Okay, so that's where the idea of a certificate authority comes in. The idea of a certificate authority is a mechanism by which a third party, the CA, can say that that public key really belongs to Bob. Okay? So how does this work? the entity, which could be a person or a machine or something, sends its public key to the CA. The CA requires something in the way of proof of identity about the entity, right? Its driver's license, its certificate of incorporation, blah, 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 blah. Something. We'll come back to that in a second. And as having done that, the CA makes a message, essentially, which we now call a certificate, that contains that public key, the identity, E, and signs it with the certificate authority's own private key. Okay, so that's called a certificate. And the certificate need not be secret, right? It has only sort of public information in it. It has a public key. It has the information that the two belong together. And now anybody getting this can say, that certificate authority said that this public key belongs to Bob. We can get the certificates from anywhere, and again, find out what Bob's public key is.
Assuming, though, that the certificate authority has not been...
Well, I was looking for an appropriate slide to talk about that, yes. So, all right. What's going on here then? Who are we trusting? When we use a certificate to infer that a public key belongs to a particular entity, we are trusting the certificate authority to have done its job right. Well, we are trusting that we understand what the certificate authority's job is in the first place, and we are trusting that it has done its job correctly. Yes.
So normally, to compromise the certificate authority, you got to compromise the root one on top, because all certificate authorities are going to go up and get signed by the next one above them until they reach the top. And I know in Boeing, we keep the root one offline, and the only way to get to them is USB stick.
Well, okay, so that's your practice as a certificate authority, but in fact, within the last year, there have been multiple instances of certificate authorities who issued certificates for sort of obvious things they obviously should not have done, like they've issued certificates for that bind a particular certificate to start at google.com. Right? They said this key belongs to Google. It didn't. Same thing with Microsoft. They have sloppy practices. And
so that's somebody essentially applied for having a key for that name then, right there?
Yeah.
But what if the servers of the certificate authority are even compromised and anything inside of that could be...
Well, that's happened as well.
So
right?
The certificates trusted within that chain alone,
right,
should have access to.
Should get broken. Now, next question. All right, so we're trusting the certificate authority to have done its job right, and we're trusting that we understand what its job is, right? Because some of certificate authorities are doing something that's called verified identity as part of issuing certificates, and they, you know, really require a high level of proof of who you are and what company you are and so forth. And others don't make that promise at all. Right? They may just allow you to email them a request for a certificate. They email you back at the address that you sent it from. There's some correspondence. They see some correspondence between the two, and they show that at least you know about this. You know, at least you're able to read this email address. But that's all they're really proving in issuing the certificate. So there are different levels of behavior of the certificate authority, even when they're working according to what they've promised to do. Some of them, you know, get tricked into doing things they haven't beyond what they've been promised to, beyond what they've promised to do. Okay, so that's one thing that is being trusted. The other thing that I will point out is you receive this certificate. You check it with the certificate authority's public key. Where did you get the certificate authority's public key, and why do you believe that it is legitimate? Well, there are things called root authorities that sign certificate authorities' public keys. So you can sort of trace things back up to a root authority who signs with its private key the certificate authority's public key, and how do you check it? With the root's public key. And how did you get the root's public key? Well, after a fashion. Let's see if we can do this. Let's see if I remember where this lives. Where did they hide it this time?
Advanced?
Not sure. Encryption. There we go. All right. When you installed your browser on your machine, it came with a bunch of certificates for things that are root servers. And look at who they are. Turk Trust, written in Turkish. All right. Hammer Firma, S.A., Chambers of Commerce. America Online. Yeah. Baltimore. Okay? And so now you go to a secure website. It provides a certificate about who it is. It's signed by something. Who can it be signed by? It can be signed by any of these pages and pages and pages of different certificate authorities. So when you're using one of these certificates in your browser, you're essentially trusting all of potentially any of those certificate authorities that's listed in your list of certificates to have done the right thing, right? We said you had to trust the certificate authority to do the right thing.
So all of those are enabled, so anybody who has anything signed by any of those guys will be valid?
Will be valid. That's a lot. Right? And so the one over the summer that happened was a certificate authority in the Netherlands. They got hoodwinked into issuing some certificates they shouldn't have. People felt that they did not respond appropriately to having done that. They didn't fess up to it until they were sort of forced to. And they were only forced to because some people noticed that something was going on that shouldn't have been going on. I'll tell you about that in a second. They didn't fess up to it. They wouldn't explain what they were doing about it. And the result of that was that the major browser manufacturers simply took them out as a certificate authority, as a root certificate authority from their lists, leading to a great deal of gnashing of teeth on the discussion boards and so forth, because there were many companies that used that certificate authority to sign their certificates, and they sort of got cut off because their certificates would no longer be trusted either. So what bad thing happened? The bad thing that happened as a result of that, that led it to being discovered, was, remember that one of those certificates was for star.google.com. Somebody in Iran went to Gmail using the Google Chrome browser. And the Google Chrome browser said, hold on, I'm seeing a certificate for Google here, but I'm the Google Chrome browser. I come from Google. I know who should be authoritative about who Google is, and he's not one of them. Okay? So that was sort of a special case that it got discovered, because it just happened that you know, because the Google browser comes from Google, Google knows who should be authoritative for Google. All right? So if at that time you were using, if you were using one of the other browsers and had this similar certificate presented to you, what would you do? You'd go read your Google Mail, perhaps send messages saying things that perhaps you wouldn't want the government of Iran to know about if you were in Iran, and in all probability they were able to read them. Okay? So this is serious stuff. Very serious stuff. I think this whole model is just ultimately not sustainable as a way of doing security, but there isn't anything out there that seems much better yet.
Are there any front runners in the ideas that might be better?
Well, there are some things that some people have claimed are better, but other people, including me, don't think so. For example, there are some schemes that sort of do a crowdsourced authenticity on certificates and entities. That, you know, if you can get enough people to say you are who you say you are, then I become more likely to believe that you are who,
like,
you say you are.
Ask the audience,
sort of.
And then botnets could totally...
Right, exactly, because botnets are out there and can sort of produce vast volumes of testators about who you might be, bogusly. Dominic?
So, two questions. One is, like, how does a company or a party get recognized as, you know, reliable enough to be...
To be a certificate authority?
And then the other one is for Stuxnet, which not much is known about, but they got a bunch of those, I guess, certificates compromised, and I'm thinking, is that, I mean... do you think that was like through coercion or bribery, or do you think that was just finding all these exploits in the system?
So, let's see. The first question again was,
How do you get established
as a certificate authority? Basically, if you go to the Mozilla website, you can look and find their policies about what you have to do to be included in this list, right? And you have to demonstrate to them that you sort of follow certain policies and so on and so forth. And I really don't know to what extent they would actually send somebody to audit your operations to do that. I suspect not. But that's sort of how it goes. Stuxnet. So Stuxnet was a, for those who haven't heard about it, was a exploit of industrial control systems that came out 2 years ago. It started. And was installed on machines running. It's interesting that there's an Iran connection with this one as well. It was installed on machines that were running centrifuges in Iran's nuclear materials processing facility. It attacked a particular brand of control system in a particular way, and managed to hide the fact that it had been installed on machines. The result being that the attacker was able to sort of run the centrifuges at speeds they were not intended to be run at and destroy them. The process by which it got installed involved getting the code signed in the Windows, you know, the Windows application, Windows driver sense, by somebody who had a key, had a signing key that said, "I'm a legitimate manufacturer of Windows drivers code." Not Siemens, not the company that actually, whose product was actually attacked, but somebody else. So again, it's sort of an issue of being, of the permission being too broad, right? The Windows code installation thing says, I'll take a driver from anybody who can sign it and let it run any piece of hardware, right? And so by getting this signed code from, that was bogusly signed from some minor Taiwanese companies that make who knows what, probably USB sticks or network cards or something. This code was accepted onto the Windows machines that were running these centrifuges. So it wasn't really a certificate authority exploit. It was a driver signing key exploit. And nobody quite knows how they did that, how they got those things signed, but I was at a talk over the summer by somebody from Symantec who had done the major investigation of this thing, and they found that those keys came from companies that were about three blocks apart in Taiwan.
I mean, it makes sense that it would be like a USB, drive maker company,
right? Right, exactly, and so again, it's a matter of you know, when we install drivers, we're saying we're trusting whoever it was who signed it, you know, and we're trusting that they still have control of their keys, which they probably didn't. So that's where it breaks down. The other cool thing about the Stuxnet thing was, just as an interesting story, was they believe that as you said, that the vector of propagation was USB sticks, and that the vector of infection of the USB stick, the vector propagation onto the actual machines controlling the centrifuge was USB sticks. that got plugged into the machines to do software updates or something. But the USB sticks themselves got infected from the machine in the site that was installed to scan USB sticks to make sure they didn't have anything bad on them. That was the way they ensured that they got the attack onto all the USB sticks that were used. Isn't that very slick? Isn't that very slick? It was an impressive attack. So who did it? Nobody knows. There are some pretty good speculations, I guess, given what it apparently was designed to do, which it did.
That'd be something that somebody really wishes they could put on their resume, I bet.
Depends on who they want to work for, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, Matt.
So, does each browser sort of have its own credentials for doing the certification?
Yep. Yep.
So, no browser is necessarily the same length, but for the most part.
For the most part, there's going to be a lot of overlap on the. Ones because, you know, you want the browser makers want people to be able to use their browsers to use the sites that have certificates signed by these folks. So,
do they assign the ISP the certificate, a set of certificates then? How does that work? Is it dependent on the ISP? Or is it just for each browser, I guess?
It's for the browsers, yeah. And sometimes you get asked by some sites like WSU to install certificates that are not signed by one of the recognized authorities. And that's probably not such good practice on the part of the entities that ask you to do that. But on the other hand, somehow I also feel like if I go, you know, if I type in the website of WSU facilities, and it asked me to install a certificate, it's probably just about as reliable as a certificate that I would automatically recognize based on a list that includes things like...
How come they don't have one how come it's not signed by SMB?
Okay, because it costs money to get these folks to sign certificates.
It costs money to get signed off by Microsoft for software as well.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why you often get software to install that isn't signed.
And all the digital software
is not signed.
So you always have to take their chair. Actually, there have been issues with certain people and networks, you know, working for the government and national labs and so forth, that
say they can't
install the drivers because they're not signed by Windows and stuff like that.
And how much is it worth?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Given Stuxnet, how much is it worth? Okay. One more thing. Something that has happened recently.
Oh, a quick question about the other company that ended up being removed from the list of
blacklisted
CAs.
Yeah.
Since every browser keeps its own list, Mozilla and Microsoft and Google just kind of put their heads together and say, we're all not going to recognize this guy anymore?
Yep.
Did one of them do it and the other one said, okay, we're not going to do it either?
No, they all were talking about it.
Okay.
They all were talking about it. Because it was a very sensitive thing because of all these other certificates that those folks had signed that were important to people. But ultimately, when the CA wouldn't step up to owning that there was a problem, they said, this is just too dangerous, and took it out. And I think that was a very reasoned and reasonable judgment on their part. Something else. Firefox recently has started, you know, the, I don't know if you remember, it used to be that down in the bottom corner of web pages that were HTTPS, you would see a lock. They seem to have moved away from that and now are showing the actual website in blue if it's HTTPS. This is probably good except for those who are colorblind, and I think that has probably not been well recognized. Work in progress. There we go. That's what I wanted to see. Why can't we? That doesn't show. Well, it did, and then it went away. That's weird. Watch. See the green thing? Apparently, it redirects to an insecure site. But you saw the green thing pop up. The green ones mean that that this is one of these verified entities. So,
do you want to have Firebug installed to see if it shows up in the HTML?
Just go to Wells Fargo.
Yeah. Well, the one that I know works is... Yeah, there we go. That's better. They don't redirect to an insecure site. So the green means that the certificate authority has sort of stepped up to saying, we do a really good job of checking the identity. Now, what recourse you as a consumer have if it turns out that they've issued a bogus certificate, I really don't know at this point, but I think you'd have a reasonably good case to go into court and say, they promised, and they didn't deliver.
What happens if you go to the NSA? Do they have an even
higher? No, I think we only have green and blue these days.
So is there any situation where that would turn red?
Lug.wsu.edu.
Okay. Okay, so this is one of those self-signed certificates. You're saying if I install this one, it will show up as red?
I don't know. Well, maybe on Chrome it shows up as red.
Oh, okay.
I understand
the risks. I know these guys. I'll add an exception.
I know where they live.
Time to change the
grade. All right, so we can get the certificate.
Security exception.
You can uncheck on the device.
Oh, I'll trust them permanently. Okay, so. All right,
really
so. Well, all right, so it's objecting. It's saying that the issuer is not trusted, but also it's for the wrong site because it's for the site lug.wsu.edu, but lug is also serving www.lug.wsu.edu, and that's not the same thing. You guys should self-sign a star certificate for yourselves. And there we go. And now it's blue. Okay. Well, all right. So all this stuff about cryptography is good. It's cool. It's better than not having it. But it doesn't mean what people sometimes say it means. Right.
Assuming everything's
assuming the world is nice.
Yeah.
good. It's good. But when you look at what actually happens, it's not so pretty.
You just through the walls and then all your applications are exposed if you're not protected.